And thank you for tuning in to the Business and Wealth Show with your host, Mac Atram. Let's go. Hey, welcome to the Business and Wealth Show with me, Mac Atram. And today I have our special guest, Peter Kingma. And I want to say this, if you are on this channel, remember to like, remember to follow, remember to make comments as you watch this or listen to this, whichever channel you're on. It's Mac Atram here, your business coach. Remember that business is not just about making income, but remember you are there to build a business that becomes an asset for you and creates wealth for you. So that's important. And today, Peter, who I'm going to introduce in a moment, he is the author of the book, Cash is King. And we like the subject of that already. Cash is King. And we're going to be talking all things. Why should you not only focus on sales revenue? Why should you not only focus on profit and loss? But remember, without cash, you will soon be in serious trouble. Peter, welcome to the Business and Wealth Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So, Peter, before we get going, tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial background. What got you to become an entrepreneur, and how did you get to do what you are doing presently?
Yeah, I guess, you know, Mac, I'm probably a hybrid entrepreneur. Right. So I guess the entrepreneur side of me is, recently have written a book, created a website and like my professional career has been advising companies, frankly, oftentimes very big companies on all aspects of cash. But what I find interesting is that these principles really apply to everybody. And so the conversation I'd love to have today is sort of that insight that I've gained over the past, 30 years working with, some of the most iconic global organizations and what they've learned, either sometimes the mistakes they've made or the progress they've made in the importance of managing cash.
Fantastic. Give us some of the large corporation names that we may recognize that you have worked with so that gives you even more credibility.
Oh gosh, no! Now you're going to put me on the spot because, so I lead the working capital practice in the Americas for Ernst & Young. I really am not at liberty to say the names of the companies,
right. I understand.
Other than I could tell you, large automotive companies, large airplane companies,
right?
Large chemical companies, but you might be able to connect the dots. But suffice it to say, very well known global brands.
Right. So yeah, we get the picture. And it clearly, these are multi-billion dollar corporations, international corporations. And if it certainly works for them, it could work for us small business owners as well. So Cash is King. Tell us about why you wrote the book Cash is King and what does that actually mean?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, Mac. In your intro, you hit on it, I think, right away. And that is that I think we do a very good job of explaining revenue. We do a very good job of explaining the importance of profit and loss. And most people in organizations also understand the roles that they play in this. But there's a third leg to the stool, and that's cash. And I think we just don't do a great job explaining the importance of cash and the decisions that are made on a daily basis that either positively or negatively impact cash. So let me give you an example. We love chasing sales, right? We love revenue. We love the thrill of going out and getting a big sale. But in the process of doing that, we may agree to 120-day payment terms, or we may agree to certain contractual obligations or service levels. And it may make sense. Those may be great business decisions, but far too often those are afterthoughts. Far too often, but we don't bake that into the equation of the cost to serve that particular customer. And so, that sort of principle applies no matter what size organization. You can imagine when I'm dealing with, these very, very large companies, that gets magnified by thousands, right? Those decisions are being made every day by countless people who don't really have the instruments or the insight into the impact of their decisions. So that's why I wanted to write this book, is to break it down and I should say right out of the gate, it's not a textbook, fear not. There are no complicated formulas or graphs. I wanted to create something that was an easy to understand guide for small business owners, entrepreneurs, to understand the importance of how to manage cash in their business.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure it's going to be it's a great book. Having spent over 30 years of your experience in that book, I'm sure it's going to be great. Now, for those who are more creative, they don't love numbers, they're good at what they do, they rely on their accountant, their, what we call an accountant. In the US, you'll say a CPA to do the numbers. So in layman's terms, the difference between sales revenue, profit and loss, or just profit, and cash, and what the difference between them and why cash is so important amongst all three.
Yeah. Let me give you a let me give you a fun story from when I started out right out of college.
Sure.
And how I learned that lesson, and then I'll tie it all together. But you know, right out of college, I was living paycheck to paycheck. Right, I was getting paid on the 1st and the 15th, and I was getting paid the same amount of money, but I knew exactly when the cash was going to come in the door. And unfortunately, you know, the lead up to the 1st and the 15th, I was running out of cash each month, right? Because I had to pay all my bills. And I refer to those as my tuna fish days, because that's about all I could afford was canned tuna fish in the couple of days, you know, leading up to payday. But what was fortunate is I knew when I was going to get paid. And I was also fortunate that my landlord didn't decide to just knock on the door whenever he wanted and demand rent. But I knew when my bills were going to be had to get paid as well. And so that was like a really important lesson in the art of timing of cash inflow and outflow. And that's really the essence of what we're talking about with managing cash. And I think households understand this. We kind of understand that basic concept when we're managing our household budget, but that somehow we get into business and we forget those basic principles. And so you could have revenue, right? You could have the same amount of revenue coming in, but if people aren't paying you and aren't paying you on time, then you don't have the cash that you're going to need to pay bills, to invest in equipment, to expand, you know, you could to pay taxes. You're going to pay taxes on that revenue, whether it's in your pocket or not. So there's a real fundamental importance of understanding the inflow and outflow and the timing of cash, and to ensure that you know is closely aligned to when you are making a sale and when you're having to make an expenditure.
Got it. So do you have any tips or steps for people to speed up the cash collection? Because often they may bill and they wait, and maybe they haven't got that process managed very well. But what can they do? What are some steps some of our listeners can take to speed up the cash coming in or cash due to them to improve cash flow?
Yeah, you know, I was a while back, my father was asking me, you know, kind of what I did for a living. And I was trying to explain it to him. And he said, well, it sounds to me like, you know, the advice just is get people to pay you faster, pay other people slower, and hold less inventory. So like, why do they need you? So I'm not sure. Maybe that's just as simple as it is. Uh-huh. But you know, it's the trick of doing all of that, right? So on the getting people to pay you faster, if you're a small business owner, you may or may not have a lot of control over the commercial terms that you set with your customers, meaning you may have to agree to certain long, you know, payment cycles, getting paid in 120 days, whatever that might be. And if that's the case, then you need to be sure you take, you control every aspect of that process that's in your control. You know, far too often I see businesses kind of relegate things like getting bills out the door as sort of something you don't love doing. It's the back office stuff. And so they delay doing it. Maybe they do, you know, five other tasks first, but it's so important to ensure that you get your bills out, you get them out accurately. If there's a purchase order reference number, that you get that they go to the right place. So you want to control every aspect of that process You know, and a good way to measure whether you're doing that or not is to calculate your best possible days to collect. So this is, if you add up all of the agreements that you've got, maybe some are 30 days, some are 45 days, whatever they are, and you figure out, all right, if everyone paid me exactly to those terms on time, what would that look like? And then if I, you know, kind of hold a mirror up and say, now what am I actually getting paid? That gap, that delta represents your failure points. That represents something that you need to go correct. There will always be customers that are slow paying, that don't live up to their end of the deal, but you need to make sure you control everything you can possibly do, especially as a small business owner, everything you can possibly do in that front end process to close that gap.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. The in your writings, you talk about a cash culture. Is that part of this cash culture? And what's the difference between a cash culture and other types of business cultures?
Yeah, I think far too often most businesses are revenue culture, or some will even say we're a customer centric culture, and those are fine. And I I think you've got to have cash as an equal, party to the to an equal partner to that conversation, right? Wow. And so a cash culture means that I understand the impacts of my decisions. So for example, maybe I'm chasing a cheaper part. I'm making a procurement decision, and I'm going to go and I'm going to source and get a cheaper component part, and I'm going to drive down my costs. But in doing so, I'm sourcing from Asia and I have a longer lead time. Right. And maybe I had to agree to a greater, order quantity requirement. And so that's cash that you're going to tie up into the business that you could deploy, to better purposes. One thing I talk about in the book is that, every dollar you spend in the business costs the same, or every pound, costs the same, but it returns different, has a different rate of return, right? So if I'm investing in inventory that doesn't sell, I'm tying up precious money in that inventory that I possibly could use to better purposes, maybe to expand something, enter a new market, pay down debt. Mm-hmm. So that cash culture is recognizing, that all of these decisions that you make on a daily basis that are, either decisions that improve sales, improve revenue, or that, control costs, that you need to also evaluate those for how they impact the inflow or outflow of cash.
Got it. All right. Thank you for that. Often when business owners, small business owners especially, realize they don't have cash in hand because of poor, sometimes they don't realize it's because of poor cash management. They resort to taking out credit, whether it's a loan or spending money on credit cards, and create a debt situation. Now, what's the danger of having too much debt in the business rather than cash?
Oh, gosh, a lot of dangers. And, we saw that with the pandemic, right? Globally, yes. When the pandemic occurred, it was very disruptive, and people were, the supply chains were disrupted. So people were spending more on transportation costs, trying to get materials. And in response to that, globally, interest rates were very low. And so what kind of creeped in into this culture was, well, the cost of debt is so cheap, so cash must be free. And a lot of businesses got themselves into some serious trouble by using borrowing as a way to keep liquidity flowing in the business. And no doubt we had to in some measure during that crisis. But now that has, that we are on the way out of that, right? And now the cost of capital has gone back up again. That being highly leveraged, that debt service that companies have and the businesses have is so difficult to manage, right? And if the one thing, Mac, that I say all the time is that the only certain thing about business is that it's going to be uncertain. And there are going to be days where something happens, a customer leaves you, there's a problem in fulfillment, global economic issues. So you need that capital, that cash to weather the storm. And if you've taken on so much debt and all of your cash is going to debt service, that's going to be very difficult for you to manage. So again, the cheapest form of access to cash in your business is the flow. It's the, how do you, I'm using examples. You could use service examples as well, but I'm using, production examples, but it's the time that it takes you to buy something, convert it, sell it, and collect that cash back. That cash cycle you want to have as fast as possible, because that's what churns off that capital for your business. Yeah. And as you say in your intro, that's what creates real wealth, not debt.
Yeah, absolutely. I see writing that said CLO, cash leadership office. What is that? When you talk about, we talk about cash culture, and did I get this right? Cash leadership officer or cash leadership office that we should have?
Both. And, honestly, that probably applies more to mid-size or larger organizations, but the principles apply to small businesses, right? And so what I see when I'm dealing with some of these very, very big companies where they've got, thousands of employees who are making decisions, oftentimes the C-suite, the leadership team doesn't know where all those decision rights are, right? They don't have a grasp of who is making day-to-day decisions that are going to impact the consumption of cash. And so this is a construct that helps them get cash back onto an equal footing with revenue decisions and cost decisions. But again, in the book, there's a whole chapter on that with concepts that could apply to small businesses. You may not need to set up a separate, cash leadership office, but apply those same principles in making those business decisions. So one example that I give is, really understand what the true cost to serve of your customers are, right? Not all customers are equal. And again, this is where we get into the trap sometimes of really being enamored with revenue and chasing sales. And we want to give the same service level, or we want to agree to maybe, putting everything on the customer's contract versus us controlling the contract terms. It's critically important that you use some basic tools to calculate and understand that cost to serve, because what you'll probably find is that, 20% of your customers account for 80% of your profitability. Mm-hmm. And the remaining 80% account for 20% of your profitability. Mm-hmm. And so, really understanding that cost to serve is part of developing a cash culture, so that you can make those decisions of where to invest capital, where to invest cash, and you're not doing so reactively.
Okay, fantastic. Listen, Peter, the book, my understanding, Cash is King, the book, is based, part of it is based on a fictional character. Is that right? Or a fictional business?
Mac, I've been accused of bringing dinner parties to a halt when I talk about what I do for a living. So I wanted to create something that was fun, something that my family would want to read, something that is accessible for small business owners. So I created a fictitious company. Each chapter, they're trying to solve a problem related to these topics. And in each chapter, there are takeaways. There are best practices that I outlined that you can apply.
Perfect. And I think it makes for an easier understanding of the subject matter, rather than what you said several minutes ago was a book laden with graphs and charts and tables and all this kind of stuff. But for someone who wants to consume it, understand it, and able to use it, just following the story, then you can think, well, certainly if I was reading it, and when it comes out, I'll purchase it. As I'm reading it, I think, oh, well, I can relate to that. So that's great. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, it's a great platform for me to display my my dad humor as well. So probably, corny jokes as well embedded in some of this. But something that's easy to read, because again, sometimes I think we make business too complicated, and we make it too, particularly there's a whole chapter just on metrics and ratios. And, if you picked that up in a textbook and you just saw a bunch of calculations, I'm guessing you'd probably just, turn right to the next chapter, right? So I try and do it in a way that's like, these are important for you to understand, But let's try and digest it in a way that's you know, easy to understand and maybe somewhat humorous as well.
Fantastic. You know, I can relate to exactly what you're saying. In 2016, when I published my third book, Face It and Fix It, which is a business turnaround book. And the reason why I wrote that book and published it was I did a lot of investigation as to why do a lot of small businesses fail, especially in the first 5 years, 90% fail in the first. Why does that happen? And I discovered 43 different reasons why a small business fails. And one of them, believe it or not, is they run out of cash. They run out of cash and they don't see it coming. So I'm glad you're writing this book. Anything you want to add to that or say to that?
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, I think sometimes we forget that, you know, profitable businesses can go bankrupt, right? Because you need that cash to be able to pay your bills, to pay employees. And if it's all tied up in receivables that, you know, people owe you, or it's tied up in inventory that's not selling, you know, then you don't have that liquidity. And it's also not just a negative, it's also the lack of a positive, right? There are going to be times where maybe your competition is faltering and you want to pounce and you want to take advantage and you want to expand. You're going to need capital to do that. And again, you know, capital that is tied up in non-productive ways like receivables or inventory, you know, isn't going to enable you to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell me something, Peter. These large corporations that you consult with and you help, you advise, why are they really hiring you? What's the real reason for them hiring you, someone like you? What are they paying you for?
Yeah. They're paying me for resiliency. And in there, I talk about a study that I also authored at my employer at Ernst & Young, where we looked at 1,000 global companies, and we looked at the impact of cash to how resilient they are. And so we looked at things like when there is an economic downturn, those in the top quartile of cash generators are far more likely to come out of that downturn significantly faster. They won't last, you know, they don't stay as long in the downturns. So examples of things like that. So I think there's a recognition again that this is a fundamental concept that somehow we have lost our way on, that, we chase revenue, we preach the importance of containing costs, and then we make a lot of decisions that really impact and affect cash. And in big businesses, they let that get away from them. And so I think there's a lesson here for small businesses is don't follow those same mistakes. Don't end up like these organizations do, because then they'll spend a lot of energy trying to correct for this. Now, the thing I love about what I do is I can measure the benefit of everything I do. So I can show, you know, I think I've estimated, I personally have helped generate over $25 billion in value creation for these companies. So I can point to, the improvements in cash flow, what they've been able to do with that capital, how that's impacted share price and valuation. So, again, big businesses that I work with, but I think there's fantastic lessons that you can glean from that if you're running a small business.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been listening to Peter Kingmar and Mac Atram here. Peter has created over $25 billion worth of value for some of the clients that he consults and some of these large corporations. So we can certainly learn from him. Now, for those who want to learn more from you, what's the best thing? Wait for the book or get the book or could they contact you if they've got questions?
Absolutely. So peterkingma.com is my website. There are links to, you can order the book. The book will actually ship on May 7th. You can place the order now. On that website, there are links to all the other studies I've done, articles I've written. So there's more content there. And you can download the introduction to the book as well.
Okay. So once they go to the website, they can do that now, peterkingmar.com. Yes. And then they can pre-order the book or not yet?
They can pre-order the book, yes.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. So I will do that myself as well. So Peter, I want to say thank you for giving us so much value. I'm going to come back to you in a moment to give us your final words or anything that you would have liked to say that you haven't had a chance to. But let me say, if you're listening, watching from where you are, wherever you are, remember the algorithms on whichever platform you are on loves engagement. So leave us a comment, give us a thumbs up, give us something. Make some comments on what Peter has said and whatever's triggered you or whatever thoughts you've had, put it into the comments as well so we can bring you more awesome experts just like Peter here. So Peter, over to you. Any last things you want to say and add before we wrap up?
You know, the one thing we didn't really talk much about, Mac, and there's a chapter in the book that you can get more detail on this, is how to align metrics and incentives to support this. You know, a quick example of that is if we're paying salespeople commissions on sales, you know, we might want to consider paying them on collected revenue, not just the sales.
All right.
So that they can help, you know, ensure that they're writing the contracts in the right way and they're helping with the collection process. So there's a whole track about metrics and incentives that are also equally important to this discussion.
That's so, so important. And so, you know, I love that. I mean, even just that is a golden nugget. So get the book, guys. So incentivize salespeople on a cash basis rather than a sales revenue generated basis. Fantastic. And does this form the what you talk about cash culture? This is all part of it.
It does. It does. In helping everybody in your organization, whether you're a big organization or small, every employee understand the role they play in the generation or consumption of cash.
Fantastic. Listen, Peter, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for adding so much value in today's session. I really appreciate your time and your energy and your expertise in this matter. Thank you for jumping on the Business and Wealth Show with us.
Thanks, Mac. Love being here.
All right. Everyone, thank you. Until we speak again, keep focusing on your business. Stay in your lane. Build your business for wealth. Build it as an asset and build it as a legacy that you are proud of. Mac Antrim checking out. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.